Hello, my name is Bill Cummings, and you're listening to Show Me Magic, a God Is in the TV recommend show.
Hello, and welcome to the 23rd episode of Show Me Magic, a God Is in the TV new music podcast with myself, Bill Cummings. And this week, we've got a special guest. It's Leo Bargery from Mount Doubt. How you doing, mate?
Hi, yeah, good. Thank you very much for having me.
No problem. How's your day going?
Yeah, I mean, it's been all right. It's been kind of uneventful, just to match up with the last 5 months.
Yeah.
Just sitting around, really, which is my main activity these days.
So you've got this new album coming out, haven't you?
Yeah, we've got a record coming out. The first one we've done with Last Night from Glasgow, which is the record label up here in Scotland. Yeah, it's our third album, so it'll be out soon, which is fun.
And it's called Doubtlands, and... over what period did you write and record this album?
We recorded it last summer in the house I'm in at the moment. We kind of kicked my mum out for 2 weeks and took over the house. So we recorded it a year ago, but the songs kind of came together maybe kind of between 2016 and 2019. So kind of bits and pieces kind of fell together over that 3 year period. But yeah, most of it was kind of 2018, 2019 that I wrote it.
Okay. And so this is your third album. What do you think you've learned from previous recording experiences and stuff to put into this album? Because I definitely think it's got like a sort of really kind of intimate sound, I guess, really, but also kind of epic at the same time, if that's possible.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I guess the previous two albums I had done, I did very much kind of by myself.
Yeah.
I went in and worked with a producer that I knew, and it was just me and him for that whole process. And both of those albums, each song would just came together in a day. So it was just kind of a bit of a mishmash and maybe a little bit rushed. This one was a little more leisurely. I was keen to take other people's opinions and kind of, and build it with a band, which I think you can hear the benefit of in the record.
Yeah, you can hear it's like sort of a band record, definitely.
Yeah, I think as well, just because obviously I've been writing for longer now, just probably felt a little bit more confident in myself and in the songs to maybe be a bit more experimental or do things that I maybe previously would have thought people wouldn't have liked, whereas now I kind of don't care.
Yeah, because there's sort of elements like that are surprising at points. Like you sort of, I'm trying to think which track I'm thinking of now, but there'll be sort of a full band thing, and then suddenly it'll just come down to an intimate, just a guitar and the vocals.
Yeah,
and that's quite a surprising, but like a real, like it sort of jolts you, and it's like that's really powerful, I think.
Yeah, I liked the idea of it kind of flitting between being, like you said, I mean, I go quite intimate at points, and then kind of having these quite kind of expansive moments as well. I just kind of wanted to do that, and it's nice that you heard that in it.
Yeah, I've been listening to it the last couple of weeks. Really great album, actually. Really good. So we'll chat a bit more about the album as we go along. We're here to talk about new music as well, and we play a few cult classics at the end. You're going to kick us off this week.
Yes, I am.
What's your first track?
First pick for me is Can't Find My Heart by Broken Social Scene.
We'll be right back. what have you got to tell us about this track? Why did you choose it?
Broken Social Scene.
Yeah.
They're a band that I stumbled across by mistake when I was actually quite young, at a time when I probably wouldn't really have appreciated them in the way that I do now. It was
I was going to say, because I sort of associate them with like 2005, 2007, years ago, really, to be honest. I've listened to them for years. I got a couple of their albums, but this wasn't really what I was expecting, to be honest.
No, well, they seem to have a pretty free and easy kind of eclectic approach to what their songs are, even within like one body of work. But I was waiting to see Frightened Rabbit, actually, up at Tea in the Park, and they happened to be the band on before.
Ah, okay.
Which for Tea in the Park at that point was a bit of an oddball choice to have.
Oh, yeah.
there was just something really engaging about watching them. There's obviously so many members in the band. I just think they're a really interesting, different band. I like the whole kind of collective vibe that they bring, in the same way that maybe someone like New Pornographers do as well. That song that you just heard is taken from an EP that they brought out at the very end of last year.
Okay.
It was the second of two EPs called Let's Try the After, and there was Volume 1 and Volume 2.
Okay.
Which I guess maybe they just felt wasn't ready to be an album or something.
Yeah.
But it's just a kind of big rock song, isn't it?
Yeah.
Horns in there as well.
It's quite widescreen and epic. I was kind of like imagining sort of speeding through American highways and stuff like that. And I did like the horns and the guitars at the end. It did sort of envelop. And like the first time I listened to it, I was a bit like, not really. Yeah. I'm hearing a kind of Bruce Springsteen vibe, maybe a little bit. Yeah. And then the second or third time, I did think, this is actually better than I thought it was. Better track than I thought it was. Because it grows, doesn't it?
It definitely does grow. Yeah, I think for them, it's pretty much as close as they're going to get to a kind of radio hit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it is kind of a pop song at its core.
I always associate them with like more being like a sort of an indie pop band, like a sort of a kind of Arcade Fire in that era kind of bands. Yeah, what do you think, Jim?
Yeah. Like you said, it was one of those ones where it didn't grab me straight away. It was sort of one of those ones I always say every week, I put them all in a playlist. And on stream them all, and when listening to them walking around the house in the garden and stuff, and it sort of didn't really attach itself to me particularly quickly. But the more you listen to it, the more it sort of grabbed you, ended up sort of being absorbed. And it's kind of a weird thing. That's one thing I was sort of like, it's a bit of a theme for this week for me with my choices, that it's sort of after listening to sort of having Siobhan last week and sort of her discussions on our podcast about how music has the power to be absorbed and it's in a moment, and it depends in what mood you're in. And in this one, it sort of just grabbed me today. Like you said, there is that certain amount of Springsteen to it. I agree. Yeah. But I'm also getting, with the keyboards and stuff, it really reminded me of a band called Boy Kill Boy from the noughties.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of those bands that could have been put in the landfill as well. I wouldn't have been surprised, but they wouldn't have been. And also a bit kind of like the delays as well. But I really like the guitar riff, the sort of the bridge breakdown in between the, well, it sort of splits the verse, really. But yeah, as I said, I initially wrote that it didn't really grab me when I first sort of started thinking about things. But it actually, like I said, it does sort of grow on you the more times you listen to it.
Yeah. I feel like it's a good driving song.
Yeah.
If you had some kind of long journey lined up.
Definitely. And it kind of goes into a euphoric chorus, I thought. It kind of does go into that kind of epic territory. But it wasn't what I was expecting from Broken Social Scene. So I always associated them with like being a bit of a pitchfork band. But I suppose I've got prejudice there because I haven't listened to them for years and years. They're kind of one of those bands that I kind of didn't realize were still going, unfortunately. Yeah. Like, you know, because they've been around for so long. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
it's one of those that I know the name, but I wouldn't necessarily be able to place a song.
I've got a couple of their older albums, you know.
Okay.
It's a long, long time ago.
Their most recent full-length album maybe came out, maybe I can't remember the title of it off the top of my head, but it's maybe 2 or 3 years old.
Okay.
And it is really, really good.
Okay.
It's maybe a little bit more experimental than the track we just heard, but it's kind of leaning towards that slightly more open sound.
Yeah, and I suppose the fact that they've been going that long shows dedication, you know, in itself, does it? And like, you know.
And there's so many of them as well.
Yeah, it's a kind of a collaborative. They're one of those collaborative bands, aren't they?
They are, yeah.
Yeah.
How many are in the band?
There's at least 8 of them.
Yeah. But I'm sure they're
I saw them, there was more.
Yeah, I'm sure they're entertaining live. So I remember seeing Arcade Fire when they were like doing the Neon Bible tour. Mm. And that was an excellent show because it was just a full on members, you know. It was like probably like 30 on the stage, you know. It was just
LCD sound system are kind of the same, aren't they? Yeah, always something to watch.
And I suppose in a way you can kind of change and evolve with that because you get in different collaborators and different, you know, influences and stuff over time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was a pretty cool track. I'll give it 7. Jim?
Yeah, 7.
I'd probably give it an 8 since I chose it.
Okay, this is Hen Ogled, and this is Trouble.
Footstep on the stair, a clap of thunder.
It's kind of Richard Dawson's collective, isn't it, Henark Led? Richard Dawson, who's sort of more of a, he's more of a folky guy, really, like more, he goes into sort of experimental areas as well. But yeah, this is quite different. This is out on Weird World, which is an offshoot of Domino that releases quite more off-kilter type of pop music, I'd say. This one really stuck with me. It's a funny one because it's sort of on that precipice of being slightly annoying, the vocal, but it kind of just about stays on that side of quirky, if that makes sense. And it's kind of catchy and it's playful and there's a kind of joyousness to it. It's kind of a wonky little delight, really. And I like the sort of the way it's kind of a subtle percussion and throbbing bass line, but then it gives space for the little weird little runs through of instrumentals. See, it's like kids playing in a sort of a music room with little detuned guitars and little keyboards and stuff. And yeah, just, and there's little chanted refrains, really cool as well. They kind of reminded me a little bit of like Television or something like that. I don't know. I won't even like attempt to make comparisons, really, because it's a bit of a wonky one, isn't it? It's a bit of an off-kilter pop song, really. And what I like about this as well, another thing is the rhyming, that rhymes sort of bizarre things like Natterjack toads and stray dogs whining, and they're like,
I thought that was quite a bodega, like kind of like when they have kind of like that kind of sort of sharp, almost yelping kind of backing vocal, sort of like repeating, and I was like a mantra. But yeah, see, the thing is, I quite like the singing actually. I like the fact that she has a Scottish accent.
I do like it. It's just, I suppose it's that style, isn't it? What I'm trying to say is it.
Yeah, yeah.
It could be great in, but it just about stays on that side of quirkiness, if that makes sense. So it is good. It is good. And it's an earworm. It's definitely an earworm. Yeah. And the more you hear it, the more you're like, yeah, you start singing along to it then, don't you?
So this is the Richard Dawson, as in the 2020 album from last year.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. I really like the kind of liquidy guitars at the end.
Have you ever heard Richard Dawson's kind of medievally inspired folk?
I've heard a bit of it.
My old flatmate really, really liked it. So I definitely came into listening to this with a bit of prejudice because I hated that so much.
Well, it's quite different, isn't it? The new album is called Free Humans. It's out on the 25th of September. So there you go.
It definitely gets points for uniqueness.
Yeah, that's kind of, yeah.
And like you said, the lyrics were, I've made a note of saying that the lyrics were very intriguing. I liked that. But I really did struggle with the vocal. I found that quite hard.
Yeah, I did think it might, yeah. It won't be to everyone's taste. It's kind of Marmite-y, isn't it?
Yeah.
I can understand why people wouldn't, but as I've said on previous pods, I just get a little bit bored of that very generic way that people sing. And some, you know, even females, all male singers, they just seem sometimes, not everyone, obviously, but it just seems to be this kind of generic way of almost singing with, it's not an American accent, but it's kind of like that generic.
I like the fact she's singing in her own accent. I mean, exactly. It's kind of, she's sort of on the edge of the notes, isn't she?
Almost. I can see why it was sort of great with people as well, but
it wasn't so much the accent that annoyed me, because I quite like
the sort of tone, isn't it? It's like a tone.
Yeah, like, there were moments of it, well, I mean, it's obviously intentional, but it almost feels wrong.
that's what I mean when I say it's on that precipice of slightly quirky and slightly grating. It's like that, but it's on that line, and I think the more you listen to it the more it kind of seeps into you. And I think I wasn't going to choose it. I was going to choose something a bit more like obvious for me, an 80s influence. But I went for this because it just was nagging away at me as an earworm. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
because it's really so catchy.
Different. Because it's so different as well. Yeah. I think that's why I chose it in the end.
You know, the kind of bands from like the kind of, I guess, mid-noughties, like the kind of Lost Campus, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. It kind of echoed that a little bit for me.
There's an element of twee about it, isn't there? There is an element of twee.
But the chorus is undeniably good.
Yeah.
Like, it's very catchy.
Yeah. All right. Henark Led, Trouble. Funny name, isn't it, really? Henark Led as well. I'm going to give it an 8 because I chose it, and just because it's a bit barking, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's catchy. It's kind of there's a bit of joy about it, even though it's kind of a bit weird.
It's about Trouble as well,
yeah.
But yeah. So I'm celebrating it.
Yeah. Jim?
7.5.
And I'll go for a 7.
Fair enough. Mm. All right, over to you, Jim, for your first pick of the week.
To me, my first one this week is The Return of Shame and Alphabet. Time coming, seeing as their debut was out the very beginning, sort of within the first week or two of 2018, and that seems a lifetime ago now after 6 months of this shit. But in some ways, it's almost the perfect thing. It's this, and it's quite archetypal shame. They're not really reinventing, you know, the shame wheel, as it were. It's just, it's got that visceral, cerebral effect, which is something that's quite appealing to me at the moment. He's you know, he's furious all the time when he sings, and when he's and live, they're just, you know, something else entirely. They're a bit of a different beast to what they are on record. But, you know, I've not been compelled to mosh to many bands over the past sort of decades, but I have to Shame. It's sort of like a release, a cathartic release. And yeah, as I said, I think a lot of people, if you didn't like Shame, this isn't going to change your opinion on them. But if you do, you know, say that it's not, you know, necessarily the you're not gonna, these lyrics aren't gonna end up in a book of poetry, maybe like some other people, but it's I really like the way there's just this massive chaos to this one. The drums kind of are a bit all over the shop, the beat, the rhythms and beats are sort of all over the shop, and we've like lots of, there's several layers of guitar going on there as well, and the bass is quite sort of chaotic and sort of mad as well. But and that's just what I like about them as well. It's something I think this country needs and the music scene needs after something new like that, after the shit that's been happening.
Can I ask you what it's about?
No. I have no idea.
Don't know.
I wouldn't.
I was hoping that was going to help me. Do you think it's just like angry with the world?
It's angry with the world, and it's like it's rhyming couplets for rhyming couplets. It's like straight out of the Noel Gallagher book of songwriting. So, but I just don't think it's necessarily about that. I don't know.
Brutally honest, though.
Pardon?
Might be brutally honest.
Can you be brutally honest?
Yeah.
Yes, of course you can.
Didn't like it at all. I really struggled with it. And I watched a video. He reminded me of a Droog from Clockwork Orange.
Yeah.
Sort of stomping around.
Yes.
But unfortunately, the song was like he was stomping around like a two-year-old. I didn't get him a lot from it, to be honest. I just found it a bit sort of lacking in. It was like someone like wandering around, like banging their head against like on the table and stuff like that. You know, it's like, okay, you're angry and you're nihilistic, but what are you trying to say? Are you just saying I'm angry, which is a fair enough emotion, but it just didn't seem to have a lot more to it than that, like a lot more depth than that. I have like a couple of things that they've done before, but yeah. I really struggled with this one just because I couldn't latch on to anything from it.
I feel
apart
like
from it being like really abrasive, I couldn't latch on to anything from it.
Yeah, that, I feel like it's probably the intro to like the album. Well, it certainly feels like it. Okay. It's kind of like an opening statement to them. I don't know because this is the first thing they've released, but it feels like that anyway.
The only thing I've ever liked they did was what was it? Yeah, One Rizzler. What do you think, Neil?
One of the things that I kind of struggle with this kind of like genre at the moment with it, you know, yeah. the Murder Capital, Fontaines, DC, Fat White Family, that whole kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I know they kind of cover different aspects of it, but I mean, it's not really for me personally. I can see why people like it. It wasn't offensively bad or anything.
No.
I like the fact that they went to school together. I appreciate that about them. But one of the things that I find a little bit annoying, and you alluded to it earlier, it's not going to end up in a book of poetry, but the way that they present themselves, like they have written in their bio about themselves, about their unflinching lyricism being inspired by Irvine Welsh and Mark E. Smith. And you're kind of listening to it thinking,
why?
Where? Like, I don't know that at all. So,
no, I know.
You know what? I couldn't even make out the lyrics. I couldn't write one lyric down that he said because he was just shouting in my ear, really. It reminded me a bit of Idols. It reminded me a bit of Idols, but
like, I feel like I have more sympathy for Shame than Idols, in my own opinion. But it wasn't horrendous.
Yeah, there was an article about Idols in The Quietus. I don't know if you saw it. It was quite a conversation on my timeline about their way they brand themselves and the way they sort of present themselves and their take on post-punk, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, like, it really loses a lot of validity to, like, what their message is meant to be.
Yeah.
When something, I know it's kind of a double-edged sword, but like, when something becomes so trendy,
yeah,
it kind of loses the weight behind it, I think.
Well,
they're kind of impish, aren't they, Shame, from what I could gather from their Twitter and stuff.
I mean, they're straight from the Fat White family kind of farm, as it were. They kind of like followed in their footsteps around the Brixton area. And I'd say, like I said, the lyrics do seem fairly sort of basic. And like I said, straight from the Oasis book of couplets, rhyming couplets. But in Venice, their debut album had a lot more to it as far as it's kind of cathartic for me as well.
I suppose it's a way of releasing frustration, aren't they, these kind of bands?
Yeah, exactly.
But I suppose I just question, like, okay, that's one thing. Releasing frustration is one thing, like I've been doing, just shouting on my laptop and stuff because it wasn't working and stuff like that. But that's one thing. But then what is the actual aim, constructive aim to it with your music? You know, what's the point are you trying to make apart from I am very angry? You know,
that's what maybe they're not.
I've always kind of felt like I don't think that music needs to have a point. So
no, not necessarily.
If you're presenting yourself and your music,
as
having a point, you really need to make sure that it's coming across.
I suppose the mood I'm in these days, I just want a bit more.
Yeah.
You know, I used to be into really loud and angry music when I was 13, 14. You know, like the era of grunge and stuff. I used to be into that, you know.
They might be trying to pull the trick where you put a weaker song out first and then back up with something that seems
maybe. Maybe this is like their streaming song and then they're going to have another single coming out of it.
I'd be interested to listen to the album when it comes out just to see where it does go, I guess.
All right. I think we said it. I think we discussed it. Jim, your track, what are you giving it?
7.5.
Leo, what are you saying?
Sorry, Jim, I'm going to give it 5.5.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I had 5 written down, but to be honest, I'm going 4. Sometimes you've got to be honest, haven't you? All right, back to you, Leo.
Yeah. Next one from me is Confirmation by Westerman. Like this one, it's an album that I stumbled across earlier this year. It's just one. It's a solo guy from London, and he's put out a record, a debut album called "Your Hero Is Not Dead." I'm pretty sure he's had a bunch of EPs over the last kind of year or two.
I've heard him the name before. Yeah,
yeah. Seems to have been operating at kind of under the radar, but obviously has it. As kind of the support of people in the right places. But I just really, really like it. It's one of my favorite albums of the year. It's not really a genre that I normally listen to. It's quite poppy, really. Like, it does lean into kind of indie territory, but I just think that the songs kind of underpinning it are really strong. The melodies are really good. And there's a lot of elements in the production that I just really, really like. It's kind of really quite washy guitars. There's glitchy electronic elements to it as well. It's a big name to band around, but there's something about his guitar playing that reminds me of Prince. Obviously, he's not as good as Prince, but yeah, I just really like it. There's something about it which I find kind of infectious and happy, and I've just really enjoyed listening to the album, so I thought I would share that one.
Kind of his vocal kind of, I couldn't put my finger on it, and I might be a bit wild. I'm like, he's a little bit Howard Jonesy, which is kind of a, and it's because there's quite a prevalent a sort of 80s synthetic drum, sort of quite prevalent a lot of stuff that we've got this week as well.
I tell you who I was thinking of, Peter Gabriel.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
I might be closer to the mark. I don't know what it was. I couldn't really think, but there was parts of it that maybe sort of sounded a bit like him. But I thought the musician, the instrumentation had a bit of a Cocteau Twins feel, a bit like the song we had as your
80s, definitely.
Yeah, but that kind of almost sort of slightly epic, sort of but poppy, synthy kind of that the Cocteau Twins basically trademarked. It had that kind of feel to it for me. I don't know.
I feel like it's kind of when genres become sort of popular again, and obviously the whole kind of 80s thing is very in. It's quite easy for acts to get really lost in that. And you've definitely seen that in the post-punk thing that's happening.
Yeah.
But when a band kind of steps it up, like it doesn't really matter that they belong to that genre for me. So I think he's kind of set himself apart just through his songwriting and his approach to it.
Yeah. So,
I think he's a lot better than some of his contemporaries.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the 80s, because I was definitely getting sort of slight Sophistopop vibes about it. You know, it's a weird one, because there's quite a lot of like acts that are coming out or are influenced by that now, which is interesting, because it is an area of pop music that was kind of maybe slightly derided at the time, but now people look back on it, like likes of Blue Nile, Talk Talk and stuff like that. They look back on it with more fondness, I think. Yeah. And somebody like Peter Gabriel, and even maybe a little bit of Sting, I was thinking, even like solo Sting, maybe. Again, not a name to throw around if you want to be like cool or whatever, but definitely something in there about it. Yeah, I enjoyed it. There's a sort of a subtle percussion and the bass lines and the way the guitars come in and out. And it's kind of not overdone, but very well produced.
Well, I think he described it as being it was something like, I can't remember the quote, but it was something like a more cerebral approach to Steely Dan.
Yeah.
With what he said.
Well, Steely Dan, really, that's another one, yeah. When I listened to it a second or third time, it did grow on me, you know, a lot more.
Yeah, it's very
the first time. Yeah, it's got a hook to it.
Yeah.
I'm hearing a lot of this kind of era of music, like being influenced coming back, but it is definitely how you do it, because you could get you could get lost in it, but... Yeah. It does sound quite cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of... Yeah, see, at the time, it was considered like coffee table music, you know? But now, when you look back on it, stuff like Roxy Music's Avalon and stuff like that, the way it's produced, it's just so... It's very sophisticated, but it's pop, but it's also got a depth to it, if that makes sense. What are we giving this one? I'll start with you, Leo.
I'm going to give it 8.5.
Jim?
7.
I feel like it's one of those ones, if the more I listen to it, I'd give it an 8, but I'm going to give it a 7.5. Bit of a coward score, but I'm going to give it that. 7.5. Yeah, I wrote about this for one of our tracks of the week. Yeah, this is Rona Mac. She's from Haverford West in West Wales. And I heard this on Adam Moulton's BBC Radio Wales show. And yeah, it really blew me away, actually. It's called Steady.
Look up beside me. was I so stupid to lose it again? That self-destruct tangent runs straight through my head. So fine on the edge now, and then I slip and slide back into the darkness that I harbor inside. And I wish I was me.
Yeah, so she says, Rona Mack says, I write songs about things that feel real to me in the hope that they might feel real to other people. If I can talk about things we've been told we shouldn't and help people connect to feelings they've tucked away in their teens, then I'll be happy when I'm old. I was just blown away by this because really she's like an unsigned artist. She's just like putting stuff out on Bandcamp on her own and she's got this album and it's just incredible stuff. A quality to her voice that did remind me a little bit of Laura Marling, but I did feel that it was a little bit more sort of maybe empathy and warmth to it. Not that Laura Marling can't have empathy and warmth. And I feel like it's a song about pain and growth and maybe mental health as well, reading the lyrics. Yeah, it's something that starts off quite small and you just think it's something. And then it grows until it's this incredible track, really.
I really like when you have harmonies with the same voice.
Yes,
because of the kind of thickness and texture that gives, and I thought she did that really well. Like you said, her voice, it's quite eerie when it's by itself, but as soon as those kind of layers come in,
yeah, the layers, yeah, that might be what it is.
It sounds like it's just like an echo that's been recorded like in a tunnel. Yeah,
that is very clever, isn't it? Really, I think she's doing it herself as well, so that's really clever.
I thought it kind of went into the kind of, I mean, it doesn't sound like Marika Hackman soul stuff, but
yeah,
the kind of gentler side of Marika Hackman, where even a little bit within her songs, where it kind of falls back a little bit.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think you'd go further, actually. You know, I agree. I think it probably sounds quite a lot like her early stuff, her first EP and first album, which is very stripped back, and she does have that kind of echo, sort of double trackedness to her, to her vocal recorded production. So, yeah, no, I agree completely.
Yeah.
I just never heard of her until last week, and now I've got the album, and I'm listening on Bandcamp every day to it, and I'm kind of addicted to her voice. So it's quite a cool when that kind of happens because I've never heard of her before. So yeah.
It's quite an art to be able to have something so understated almost that, and because I said there's points you think the guitar's just fallen away and disappeared.
That's right. Yeah.
But without losing like any kind of, maybe intensity, but kind of concentration, it still holds you, it still engages you. Because I really love the sort of the finger picking arpeggio guitar,
yeah.
quite Drake like that, but obviously she doesn't sound like Drake, but Yeah, no, I love this, really do.
Yeah, and she gives it some welly with the strumming as well. It's like, yeah.
Yeah, that's what
like,
changes.
That makes it even, yeah, that kind of becomes this epic at the end. And I was like, yeah. I think is that's what sort of surprised me with some songs, that they start off as one thing, you think it's one thing, and it sort of changes your perception. And that's maybe similar to the stuff you're doing, Leo. It's like where you build up a dynamic that may sort of surprise you as it's going along. Yeah. It doesn't just stay as one thing. It kind of has little peaks and troughs, and you
know. It's a very confident, assured,
very
bit of songwriting, I thought, and it had a real warmth to it, which was nice, because sometimes stuff just feels a bit flat.
That's right.
Yeah, it felt very genuine. I don't think it took me anywhere so new that I kind of had the same reaction that you're describing. Fair. I mean, I liked it. I enjoyed listening to it, and I will listen to it again.
Yeah, but I'm not saying like classic territory, but I am saying it affected me, and I'd never heard it before. It's that one of those things, you know.
I'm assuming, is she quite young?
25.
Oh, not really. Well, I mean, that is young, but not like.
Pretty young, yeah.
Not
like, I'd never heard of her before, so I assume she's pretty new. So
I literally just put it on again just to listen to in my head, and it's got there's a chord change. It's "Place to Be" by Nick Drake, which is what I think I was thinking, which is brilliant. I mean, I say it doesn't sound like that necessarily.
No.
But it's just that there's a chord change, and I knew I knew it from somewhere, and that's I don't know. It's weird little things like that for me that can just. Sort of does stop you, and it's just
she's
kind
got
of
a
like,
track called "Woman" on the album as well, which was another single, which is really good and totally different. All right, what are you thinking? I'm gonna give it 8. But,
yeah, 8.
Yeah,
I'd probably give it a 7 myself, but I would be keen to listen again.
Okay, so my second and the last new track of the podcast, and it's 07 featuring Lou Stone, and this is Shadows.
There's a moment. sleep in my bed now for the longest time. But I've been waiting in my room, I've been whistling a tune now that I can't describe, and I don't know why. So if you really wanna know, I don't think I'm gonna go and venture out, 'cause they keep on running through my head, words I cannot find and no I can't deny. But I'm still far from the end.
Sent to me by one of the regular PRs that I'd just done something for, and he just started to chuck that in. And obviously 07 something full from the early noughties that people sort of remember for particular singles. My favorite by them from back then was Somersault with Sia, which is again, it was sort of quite a wistful track, almost a bit like that Lars Rona song. But this one sort of took me a bit by surprise. I thought I'd give it a go, and whilst he's the guy, Lou Stone's vocals is, it kind of has that kind of gruff, soul-y, bluesy vocal that we sort of had a couple of years ago with people like Rag and Bone Man and stuff like that. But I don't know why, it just seems to work a lot better with this. It's because they do quite a good job of the kind of orchestral slash electronic music that they always then have quite a melancholic singer. So if it's not him, it's Sia or other people, and they do that quite well. And it's generally, it's a lot of the times it's something you just want to put in the background. But this, I don't know, this is coming from an EP called Shadows, just a four track EP, which is a complete collaboration between 07 and Lou Stone. And I don't know, it just sort of drew me in. It was one I was listening to quite late at night when I was picking my tracks on Sunday night. It did take a couple of listens, but like, as I was saying before, sort of based on the fact that after I sort of got involved with the Siobhan Wilson's podcast on her fan space, and listening to her podcast about sort of how music sort of affects and how it's a case of being absorbed and things like that. And it's, you know, a moment. And she had a discussion with someone called Rachel Simani about what is a song. It's something you inhabit. It's a moment, you know. And I think that's sort of how this affected me, really. I can't really explain why. I sort of chose it, really. It was something that sort of just stuck with me.
I mean, I liked it. I thought it was pretty classy.
Yeah.
It was clean. It had a kind of loungy feel to it, especially at the start. Yeah. The kind of beat almost had
90s, sort of, I was thinking of. 90s.
Yeah.
The beat had an almost kind of Radiohead vibe at the beginning, which I didn't really expect. And then, like you said, it took a kind of soulful turn.
Yeah.
I liked it. I thought it was pretty good. There was a kind of a reluctant Bond theme. I think maybe I was just being misled by this.
It's interesting. I was talking about Bond themes the other day because apparently every time there's a Bond movie, they ask for like themes and stuff, and there's always like four or five that are rejected. You know, like swimming around and stuff. Radiohead did a Bond theme, didn't they? Was it Spectre?
I think. Yeah.
But yeah, there's always, I interviewed David McCallman like a few months ago, and he said that he did one with David Arnold that was rejected for one of the movies. So it's interesting that they have, like, you know, there's like a list of rejected Bond themes like hanging around, aren't there?
It'd be quite good to hear them all, wouldn't it?
Yeah, like on an album. Yeah, rejected by Bond.
The Radiohead was really good. They kind of released that just before they, I think it was just before they released A Moon-Shaped Pool.
They were always going to release Adele, though, weren't they? It's like,
I think it was Sam Smith.
I always think it's Adele, that one. It's Sam Smith, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think I just associate them all with Adele now. Because she did one as well, didn't she?
Yeah.
Skyfall, I think.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Do we know who's doing the new... Oh, yeah, it's Billie Eilish, isn't it?
Right.
Yes.
That makes sense. That does make sense.
Have we heard it? We have, haven't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, it's all right. It's all right. It's not bad. But
I felt it kind of... It stuck too close to the form of a Bond song. If you're going to get Billie Eilish, make it Billie Eilish-esque.
Bond is like a corporate bloody brand, mate. They're not going to take any... They don't take risks. And that's kind of the reason why they reject a lot of the songs, because they never take risks, do they?
It's like, what was it?
Jack White and, you know,
Alicia Keys,
Sheryl Crow and all this kind of stuff.
White one was not good.
No.
That was at a time when there were other choices that they could have chosen, a better one. Bond is very, to be honest, I'm not really interested in Bond, you know what I mean? It's a very male sort of, you know, fantasy, isn't it? Sean Connery, I mean, you know, those were quite good, but, you know.
If you're going to change and have Billie Eilish,
Bond,
you might as well make it Billie Eilish-esque, or if not, you might as well
have they were never going to do that. They were never going to
make it like Sherman.
And also, her newer stuff is more in that vein. It's kind of in, like, that more smooth pop kind of vein anyway. A lot of it's kind of balladry, really.
I feel like the Chris Cornell one is probably the best.
You reckon?
I loved that one. is that a controversial opinion? I don't know.
I struggle to remember it that well, to be honest.
I can't remember that well, no. I can just think of his voice.
Oh, the Madonna one wasn't good, was it, really?
Oh, that was awful, yeah.
I thought this was pretty good, this track, anyway, getting back to on topic.
There was a song.
That's fine. It's nice to go on a tangent. Yeah, it kind of reminded me of the 90s kind of trip hop era of those kind of with the strings and the kind of trippy beats and the, but yeah, it had a kind of slightly jazz kind of feeling, jazz and soul feeling to the vocals.
Yeah.
And it's kind of draped in strings, really.
I feel that was the first 07 song I've ever actually knowingly heard.
Yeah. They're one of those bands that have been around for years. They are actually from the, you know, they've been around since the 90s, I think.
Yeah, because age-wise, I totally missed them first time round. So
Well, that's the interesting thing when we get like younger people on the podcast. Like, who did I interview? Fen Lily, and like I was saying to her,
I love her stuff.
Yeah, she's brilliant, and like she's a brilliant like person to interview as well. But I was saying to a certain artist, and she just didn't have a clue.
Yeah,
from the '90s, and I understand. Because it's like she's only like, I think she's only in her early 20s, isn't she?
23 or something, I think, yeah.
Yeah, so. But then she was referencing some other stuff, like Sparkle Horse, you mentioned. So
Sparkle Horse is my favourite band.
Anyway, what are we giving this? Jim, what are you giving this one?
7.5.
I'm saying 7.
Yeah, I think I say 7 as well.
Okay.
Cool. All right, up next, for me, I've chosen Silver Jews and the Wild Kindness.
I wrote a letter to a wild flower on a classic nitrogen afternoon. Some power that hardly looked like power said I'm perfect in an empty room. Four dogs in the distance, each stands for a kindness, yeah. Bluebirds lodged in an evergreen altar. I'm gonna shine out in the wild silence. I'm gonna shine out in the wild side.
of X-rated picnics. Behind the walls of medication, I'm free. Every leaf in a compact mirror hits a target that we can't see. Grass grows in the icebox. The year ends in the next room. It is autumn and my camouflage is dying. Instead of time, there will be lateness. Instead of time, there will be lateness. Instead of time, there will be lateness. And let forever be delayed.
Silver Jews have been one of my favourite bands for quite a long time. One of those bands, I'm not even really sure how I discovered them at this point, but led by David Berman, American kind of cult hero songwriter.
Yeah.
One of the best lyricists ever, in my opinion. I don't know. They've just always been an amazing band. Like the album that The Wild Kindness comes from, American Water, is probably their most borderline commercially successful. David Berman sadly killed himself last year.
Yeah.
Just following the release of a new project called Purple Mountains, which was also absolutely amazing. A sad kind of story, really. He played music for a long time and then seemed to kind of pack it in because of mental health pressures and drug abuse problems. I think his dad was involved in arms dealing or something.
Good Lord.
Christ.
And he had some in a legitimate sense. not kind of black market guns running.
Is there a legitimate sense to arms dealing though?
Well, there's a morally illegitimate but
international law.
Yeah.
And then there's arms smuggling, you know, which is a different thing.
Oh yeah, much more fun though. But I think he apparently had a real sort of crisis of conscience about his dad's life, and just kind of packed in music for the best part of like a decade or longer. Wow. I think
didn't know that.
But interesting guy, and I do think that's one of my favourite songs by Silver Jews. I love that.
Yeah, so the first time I'd heard that, The Wild Kindness, but yeah, I really liked it. Again, it's weird. It's another one that just sort of took a while. It's like, oh, okay, it's that, you know, it's that kind of style. It's that, say, alt's like a rock kind of thing. But there's a lot more to it. There's a lot more layers. There's a lot more, you know, intrigue as well. And
lyrically, it's just so...
Yeah.
Just pretty much at least every second line, for me anyway, he comes out with something that I just kind of think, Christ, I wish I could have written that. But sadly, I didn't.
Yeah, I thought it was cool as well. And again, like all of your tracks, Leo, it kind of grew after a few listens. And there's a kind of atmosphere to it. And its delivery is very laconic and kind of, but yeah, it's still got like a sensitivity to it and an empathy. What are we giving this Silver Jews?
I'll give it a 9.
Jim?
7.5.
I'm going 8, all right. Is it to me then?
Yeah.
To me? this is Throw Muses, and this is Green. Yeah, Throw Muses. I'd never heard. Well, I said never heard of them. I'd never heard Throw Muses until like the sort of like late '90s, early 2000s, when a friend put this track specifically on a compilation for me, a mixed CD, and yeah, I really love this one. I've always really loved this one. It's kind of the bounding bass lines and the kind of weaving interlinked harmonies. And it kind of builds up a pressure of kind of an emotion, really, and an atmosphere.
Mm.
And the voices that go together, I just find it really unique of a track, really. And it's always stuck with me as, like, yeah, just a really affecting track. And it's from 1986, anyway. It's from 1986. So
that was definitely one of the, for me anyway, the one of the most engaging songs from the playlist.
Yeah,
I liked it a lot. I really, really that kind of the guitar riff that a lot of the song kind of pivots on. I actually really don't like, but
okay,
it kind of the song works around it in a way that is almost like a bit hypnotic, like it's got this sort of rhythm.
Very much so.
Which kept drawing me in, even though I didn't really like the guitar part. So it was a bit confusing. But
when you say you don't like the guitars, is it kind of because it's slightly discordant, or what are you saying?
I don't know. There was just something about the riff.
Okay.
Which for me, just it wasn't something that I listened to and kind of thought, yes, that's for me. There's nothing wrong with it. It
was Strong Muse are slightly underrated, and this is from their debut album, 1986, and they were on 4AD, and this one is written by Tanya Donnelly rather than Christian Hirsch, which the rest of the album apparently was written by Christian Hirsch and stuff like that. She was more involved in it, but this one is specifically Tanya Donnelly. But Tanya Donnelly and Hirsch are the main vocalist. I don't know, like frustration and delight and everything in between.
I thought there was something with PJ Harvey.
They kind of predate all that. So
it's weird. Well, it's one of those names of the bands that are kind of like cult and legendary.
But they are. They're very influential. There is actually a reason I picked them as well, because they've got a new album out. So it wasn't just like checked out.
Is she in that though? Because she was originally part of it, and then she left to join the Breeders, didn't she? And then
It's confusing with Throw Muses, because they have, you know, they have kind of members have changed, the members have left, and they do their own solo stuff. They've got, you know, offshoots of Throw Muses. I think it was like Big Wave. There's solo stuff with Christian Hirsch, obviously. There's a lot of there's the Breeders. 50-foot wave. Oh, there's so many little sort of. Yeah, I'm not sure Tanya Donnelly's involved in this latest incarnation. Yeah, that's a good point. But
she had Belly brought a new album a couple of years ago, didn't they?
On his Belly as well.
Well, that's where I recognise the name from, because I got that last Belly album. So, but yeah, I didn't realise she was in Throwing Muses. I knew she had something to do with the Breeders, but yeah.
In the song we just listened to, I'm not sure if you guys kind of heard it as well, but it felt like there was sort of almost kind of like trad folk, sort of Celtic undertones to it, which was...
Yeah. There are with Throw Muses, definitely.
Right. I wasn't expecting that at all.
Well, Christian Hirsch, like, if you listen to her albums, she's much more in a folk vein, like alt folk vein.
Okay.
She did probably her most well-known song. She did a song called Your Ghost with Michael Stipe. Me and My Charms as well. Yeah, it's a really great album.
There was something quite REM-ish about that. The guitar riff that I didn't like. in the way that REM do that to me as well, where I'm listening to something and there's something in it that's fighting against me liking it, but I like it.
Okay. Interesting. But I think Throw Muses are one of those bands though. They're very underrated, and then they're also sort of very influential as well. Mm. And also, not all their stuff is like the same either. So this is quite like, I wouldn't say there's a lot else that is like this, really, you know, like, so really they're very clever at like sort of, they do one thing and then they move on to the next thing pretty quickly, you know, so they're very, you know, very creative.
Yeah.
Endlessly creative, really, when you think about the amount of offshoots and different solo stuff they've done as well. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely want to recommend. I definitely think that they're like a cult classic act that would put in this
title.
Yeah, put in this genre. So,
yeah.
I'm giving it an 8.
Yeah, 8 for me too.
I'd written down 8 as well.
Cool. Okay, so
your cult classic of the week, Jim.
I'll finish off. Not necessarily a cult artist, but maybe not quite such a recognised song. I don't know. But this is Joni Mitchell and Little Green.
Born with the moon in Cancer, choose her a name she will answer to. Call her green, and the winters cannot fade her. Call her green for the children who've made her little green. Be a gypsy dancer. he went to California. Hearing that everything's warmer there, so you write him a letter and say her eyes are blue. He sends you a poem and she's lost to you. Little green, he's a non-conformer, just a little green, like the color when the spring is born. There'll be crocuses to bring to school tomorrow, just a little green, like the nights when the northern lights perform. There'll be icicles and birthday clothes, and sometimes there'll be sorrow. Child with a child pretending, weary of lies you are sending home, so you sign all the papers in the family name. You're sad and you're sorry, but you're not ashamed. A little green, have a happy ending. Just a little green, like the color when the spring is born. There'll be crocuses to bring to school tomorrow. Just a little green, like the nights when the northern lights perform. There'll be icicles and birthday clothes, and sometimes there'll be sorrow.
Weird. This really, because I don't know what I heard it on. It was on something, and it was kind of like one of those ones that you don't necessarily remember from Blue. It's more, it's not. My Old Man.
But the album's considered a classic, though, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. It's not like Case of You or anything like that, or River, but it's one of the ones that I remember really well. It really stands out from when my mum used to play it when I was like sort of 8, 9, 10, sort of something like that. She used to play it a lot. And when you're that age, you're not really interested in a woman playing a guitar on her own or piano or whatever. It just doesn't really interest you as slightly. But it fits in with my theme for this week's pod. It's just something that I absorbed like 30 years ago. And I bought Blue not that long ago, sort of a couple of years ago. And it's weird how it now affects me. And it's something that's like, I feel like been in my head, you know, and I could recognize anything from it without really thinking about it. It's just one of those weird things. And then kind of like very strangely, Siobhan Wilson last week, then when I subscribed to her Patreon, her fan space, does a cover of it at the end of her most recent podcast. And so it's kind of weird and sort of serendipitous. But it's just, I don't know. It's another one of those ones like we were talking about with Rona Matt, that there's a chord change thing that just sort of gets you right in your gut. And there's something about the drop into the chorus, the chord change that, which just like sticks in the back of your throat and you kind of get all these tingles. Well, I do. And and I think you say one of these things that's just sort of lived with me for 30 years now and without really knowing. And then it sort of, I don't know. But it's just an amazing song.
You got an idea what it's about, Jim?
It is. I think it is about her adopted daughter that she had. She had it adopted. She didn't adopt it. She calls it Little Green, I think, because she never gave it a name. It's something along those lines. When she was young, she had her daughter adopted. Obviously, this is from 1971, so I don't know the story post this song when it was done for Blue. But, yeah, it's about her daughter that she had adopted. It gets heavier, doesn't it? The more you think about it.
I think this was probably my favourite of the songs from the ones I chose as well. This one, I've never really given much time to listening to Joni Mitchell beyond the kind of obvious hits.
Yeah, exactly.
And obviously she's in Love Actually, to a point.
Yes.
Because age-wise, I was maybe like 14 when the first Laura Marling album came out.
Yeah.
So I listened to that a lot and stuff. And,
yeah.
But especially in this song.
Oh, yeah.
I just kept thinking, Christ, Laura Marling is...
Yeah.
Exactly. Yes.
Oh yeah.
I'd never been aware of that before.
Oh, I'm a huge Laura Marling fan as well. She's a goddess. So yeah, it's very Joni, Bob Dylan, Neil Young, just all in that. But totally Joni Mitchell.
The vocals are exquisite though.
Yeah.
Just absolutely exquisite.
Cut glass, yeah.
It's so simple as well, but it's so good.
Yeah.
Like the lyrics, the melody, everything is just perfect.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, it's I thought it was really affected as well. Even though I didn't really know what it was about, I still felt like the couplets were so vivid and kind of the way she sort of describes it. And then there's a kind of duality to her voice, like, you know, there's kind of the tone is just like really sort of, I don't know, she sort of scales it, doesn't she? Goes right up on her notes and then sort of but there's a kind of a sort of a wistfulness, regret as well. I'd say you definitely can hear Laura Marling has definitely consumed a lot of this Joni Mitchell influence, but I'd say Joni Mitchell's got more, for me anyway, there's just more, I can feel the pain more, but that's a really unquantifiable thing, isn't it? Because she's obviously, Joni Mitchell's had this experience of like,
exactly, yeah,
a lot of experience. Whereas Laura Marling, when she came out, she was just like this young girl, but she had this really old soul. But maybe she hadn't actually experienced a lot of the things. It took her a long time to have, you know, when she'd actually lived a bit more of her life, you know, and had more experiences. Maybe then her work changed a bit. But I just think with Joni Mitchell, there's something like The River as well. That's just incredible. You know, the vocal on it is just, it could just cut you down, you know. It's just extraordinary, really. Extraordinary.
You said that about duality in it, in her voice, but I sort of got that emotionally whilst listening to it, where it kind of had these like quite profoundly sad moments.
Yeah.
And then it would flip to feeling quite optimistic.
Very
quickly.
I was just going to ask you one more question about your album.
Sure.
So have you got any more singles coming out from the album, or is it?
Not before the album, obviously, but we might put one out maybe 6 weeks or so after the record. I'm not actually sure. We've talked about it in the past and we might, I just want to kind of see how the album goes and then.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, lockdown's been good for writing music, so there's tons of music to come in the next year or so as well. So.
Cool.
All right, so that's been the 23rd episode of Show Me Magic. Plenty of tangents. Thanks, Leo, for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, cheers.
Cheers. Jim, till next time.
See you later.
Till the next time. Ta-da.
Ta-da.
Bye.
You've been listening to Show Me Magic, a Goddess in the TV recommend show. Check out more on goddessinthetvzine.co.uk. We're on our Twitter page, Goddess in the TV. We're also on Facebook, Goddess in the TV Zine with a dot. Thanks for listening. Until the next time. Ta-da.